Boucher, Martin, Davidson, and we're happy to have you all here. We have a rather full agenda. Representative Jim Zwack is also listening and joining us this afternoon. We have a teleconference planned for Senate Bill 157 and for House Bill 154. It is my intent to move these bills today so that the committee can go on to a number of the other issues that we have before us, and also House Bill 160 if people are happy with the version that they find in front of them. So that we might take a look at some of the proposals that are in there. It may take more time, but at any rate, I'd like to go ahead with Senate Bill 157 today and House Bill 154 if possible. Okay, I'm going to go to the teleconference sites at this time. And I would request that as you speak, would you please identify yourself, and if at all possible, please keep your remarks as brief as possible, because we do have quite a few people who wish to testify. We have been joined by Representative Kurt Menard also. I'd like to begin by going to Bethel. I believe there is one individual in Bethel standing by to testify. If you can hear me, please go ahead. Bethel, can you hear me? We can't hear Bethel.
The permanent fund was established.
Excuse me, sir. We just now started to hear you, so could you please start over again and give your name for the record?
Ivan Widom, W-I-D-O-M.
Thank you, Ivan. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll start over. The earnings reserve fund should not be used to balance the current year's budget or any budget in the near future. The permanent fund was established to provide funds for all generations of Alaskans when oil runs out, not deficits that were created by whatever reason or for whatever reason. I think taking money from the permanent fund and putting it into the general fund will take away the possibility of covering any inflation that occurs in the future. And if anyone has taken notice, we do have changes in the inflation rate occurring now. Interest rates are starting to go up, and those are good indicators of possibility of increased inflation. Secondly, I think that the permanent fund dividend program is important for all of the people of the state of Alaska. And as money is taken out of the earnings reserve account, or whatever you want to call it, whatever somebody in Juneau decides to call it in the future, that will take away from the permanent fund dividends as well. To me, it's inappropriate to continue talking about taking money out of the permanent fund when we need that money for the future. Anyone who can tell that the oil is running out will automatically understand that that money is there for the future of Alaska, and that any time any is taken out in the present time or in the near future, we will not have as much later on. I also would like to support the state income tax. House Bill. I think that citizens should pay something to keep legislators properly in mind. And being involved somewhat in government for the last 20 years, it's always appropriate for people to pay government, pay for their government, pay for their services, and to make sure that the people that they send to represent them. Will be recognized and will be dealt with in a much better fashion if they go to Juneau and elsewhere with money, with our own money out of our own pocket. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Widom. Is there anyone else there in Bethel to testify?
No, ma'am.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll move on to Fairbanks now. Is there anyone in Fairbanks who wishes to testify at this time? If so, go ahead.
Okay, fine. It's
okay. Yes, there is.
I didn't sit down with this.
Fairbanks to Juneau, you hear it?
Yes, we can hear you just fine.
Okay. My name is Jim Wagner, and I'm president of the Association for the Protection of the Permanent Fund. I would like to echo the comments of the speaker from Bethel, and we find ourselves in agreement with that. We urge defeat of all legislation which uses any portion of the permanent fund earnings to fund the Governor Cooper's budget or any future governor's budget at any time. It is our position that the earnings of the permanent fund belong to all the people of Alaska, the present generation and the future generation. When the dividends are paid, those dividends benefit the current generation. When money is placed into the permanent fund, that benefits my granddaughter, my granddaughter's future children, and so on down the road. The permanent fund has more economic impact on the state of Alaska than anything else that has ever been done. We have a real possibility in coming years of substantially improving the quality of life for all citizens, not just those who are blessed with a politically popular motherhood issue, which has been funded as it has been in the past, but each person. So I would again emphasize that any legislation to use those earnings should be dropped. We would like to also speak on behalf of a constitutional amendment which would deposit half the earnings into the dividend program and deposit the remaining half to the principal for the purposes of inflation proofing and or growth, depending on the effects of national inflation. I too note that inflation this year is 2%. In recent years, it's been up as much as 7%, 10%, and so on. And we should keep in mind that 10% of a $8 billion is $800 million. And that would more than eat up the budget earnings reserve fund. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. And one final reminder, Senate Bill 157 appropriates about $155 million to the budget. I ran that on my computer to see what that would be in terms of lost earnings for my granddaughter 15 years from now. Depending upon the scenario of inflation proofing and growth and that sort of thing, looks like it's somewhere between $200 and $600 in lost dividends to every man, woman, and child 15 years down the road. So I urge defeat of that legislation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. There is a question for you here from Representative Martin.
Yeah, thank you. You said you represent a group. I've received wires from you before, but how many people in your group? Is it an instant group that you suddenly brought up on paper, or what kind of foundation does it have? How many members?
At this point, we have about 100 dues-paying members, and we have 1,500 known supporters. And I'm sure there's a lot more supporters out there that than you can believe there. I would say that you have about 530,000 people who receive dividends, and I'm sure the stockholders of the corporation are interested in having the dividends grow and be protected. So I would not worry about counting the numbers there, sir.
Well, the reason why I answer that, we have a number of people that tell us they have this group and that group, and when we check into it, it's a person of one or two people. I mean, when you use the title of a group, it, not to say that you're bad, but some of them, when we checked out, are really fluky. Could you send your membership to us? We'd sure appreciate it. Maybe I'll sign up. I doubt it, but.
Well, would you like to join? It's $5 for adults and $1 for kids, go ahead.
I think Representative Martin's going to withhold judgment on that, so for the time being anyway. Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else there in Fairbanks?
There's no one else, and one quick comment there that of all the things you folks can do for all your constituents, I think probably the only thing that affects everybody fairly and equally is the permanent fund, and it affects our children and everyone else. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'd like to go to Anchorage at this time. I believe there are two people standing by to testify. Please go ahead.
Hello, my name is
Menard Builder Supply. I thought you people might find it interesting to be given maybe some information as to what the impact of the economic downturn has been on a company such as ours. This is, as most of you know, I'm sure, this is the fourth straight year of declines in the construction industry in the state of Alaska. The impact on our company has been that our sales volume is half of what it was in 1983. This has resulted in the loss of 300 permanent jobs in the state of Alaska, of which 120 of those jobs have been eliminated in the last 8 to 9 months. Additionally, all of our employees have had to take a 10% pay cut to help try to keep the dollars to make sense. Furthermore, we have had to close two of our stores. I am sure that probably a lot of people in the state aren't real concerned about specifically what is happening to our Builder Supply or our bottom line or our balance sheet. But the bottom line is we are a major employer in this company, and the downturn has had dramatic effect on us, which affects the state at large. The freezing of the funds for capital projects in 1986 dramatically accentuated the problems in the building industry as well as the problems for our company. We understand the economics and the sensitivity to utilizing the permanent fund earnings. However, we do believe that passage of this bill will benefit Alaskans in these difficult times, providing jobs and some economic stimulus until the economy improves. Therefore, we urge the passage of Senate Bill 157. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for joining us today. Is there another person there who wishes to testify?
Yes, this is Jim Voigt of Wilder Construction, and I would like to have this bill brought out of your committee because capital projects are part of the future of Alaska, and we need to fund these projects so we can go ahead and build Alaska. The also possibility of losing the matching funds from the federal government if we do not get this money out into the construction season, and also if we don't have it online by May 15th of this year, we will lose probably the areas of northern and western Alaska to do any capital projects this season because of the weather limitations. Also, if we can find revenue sources to begin building a stable construction economy in Alaska, we can get away from these wide fluctuations of $1.2 billion in 82, I believe it was, and we're talking now of possible $58 million next year. And no sound business can be built and maintain itself with that rate of a swing to grow in Alaska. So I think it's for the future of Alaska, we do need to have capital projects continue on with the constant steady growth. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in Anchorage that wishes to testify at this time? If not, we will move on to Nundalton, where I believe Mr. Jim Wilson is standing by to testify.
Yes, thank you very much, Representative Dilmer. Certainly do appreciate the opportunity and the access to a teleconference. This is our first for our community. I'd like to make note to the two Spinard Builders and in their testimony in regards to the future of Alaska, I believe that the future of Alaska is dependent upon what the small cities in rural Alaska can do for their communities to get them off welfare and all of the other statuses that may come about because of lack of money. The freezing of the capital projects last year under Senate Bill, under the permanent fund by the former governor, is really going to hold up a lot of capital projects for small cities that really have a lot of benefit to the local community. If the local small communities don't survive, neither will the local big cities. So we have we don't have too much money in Senate Bill 157, but it reflects a total of what can happen in the permanent fund. If
very much, sir, for your testimony. Is there someone else there that would like to testify now?
This is Leah Wilson from Green Mountain. I would like to speak in reference to the Ivan William from Bethel. I heard him comment that from 15 years from now, the permanent fund that we need it instead of spending it now. But for us over here, we've been trying to build a road now for 4 years. And 15 years from now, if we build it now, 15 years from now, the state or the federal government will have to expend millions more dollars to build it. And I really believe that we need our capital projects and get them done now so that later on, because of inflation, that we don't have to spend too much more. So I urge the passage of Senate Bill 157. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Go ahead, Non Dalton, if you have other people.
They seem to think we've expanded on what we feel is the local community's feelings. So we certainly thank the House State Affairs and Representative Yalmer and all the House members there. We thank you very much for giving us an opportunity to testify.
You're very welcome, and thank you for participating, Non Dalton. It is my understanding that we have covered all of the sites with all of the people who wish to testify. If that's incorrect, would someone please let me know if there's someone else who wants to testify? Is there anyone else here in Juneau that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 157? If not, then the committee has before it a House committee substitute for Senate Bill 157, which reflects our discussion from our previous meeting and I believe accurately represents what it was that we had intended. And I would be happy to receive a motion to adopt the CS at this time. Linda Boucher, is there objection to adopting House CS SB 157? That objection is adopted. Is there any additional discussion, or would you care to move? It's moving.
I move it's moving.
Okay, it has been moved that House CS 157 go out of committee with individual recommendations. Representative Hoffman.
Yes, Madam Chair. I do support the legislation, but I have a disagreement with the amount. I believe the amount should be $154 million, and unless that's changed, I will have to vote do not pass.
Just to clarify the amount, I have consulted with the House Finance Committee Chair regarding the amount,
Jim.
And there are really two choices. It is no longer 154. It is either 174.9 or 124.9. And the difference is the $50 million from the Rail Belt Fund. The reason this bill says 174.9 is it doesn't assume that the Rail Belt bill, which is in House Resources, will pass. I think many people believe that it will, but this does not assume that it does. If the House Resources Committee and the Finance Committee and the entire body adopts that allocation from the Rail Belt Energy Fund, then this will only have to be 124. Hopefully we will know that before it hits the floor, but that's why it is the larger amount. Any other discussion? Is there any objection then to HCS 157 going out with individual recommendations? Without objection, it does. Okay, then the next bill before us is House Bill 154. Again, is there anyone who wishes to testify on House Bill 154 here in Juneau? Or at any of the other sites?
Yeah, I would testify on it.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Yeah, this is Fairbanks, and this is Jim Wagner speaking as a private citizen.
You talked about it some more.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, it's my understanding that House Bill 154, this is the governor's proposal on income tax, am I correct?
That is correct.
It grieves me to have to speak on behalf of income tax. I think this would be your first choice as opposed to dipping into the permanent fund, which in my judgment should never ever be done. Income tax, at this point, I do feel is the money's primarily being wasted on self-serving vested interest groups, and therefore I have difficulty supporting an income tax. Would suggest as an alternative, cutting the budget. I think we probably need a few less $115,000 a year airport administrators and a few less roads built out here in the sticks to maintain the local pork barrel. Thank you very much.
Did you hear that?
Thank you very much for your testimony. Anyone else? Okay, if not, then we have before us House Bill 154. Committee members, in your packet, there is a memo dated April 6th from Teresa Bannister to me, which basically would I would like to propose as an amendment to the governor's bill. What it would do is allow you to deduct the longevity bonuses and the permanent fund dividends from your income. And the rationale, I guess, is basically that these are two programs that the state of Alaska distributes to its residents, again, giving a break to residents that non-residents would not have available to them. And so I would like to offer that at this time, and I would like the committee to adopt a CS for 154, which would include the longevity bonus and dividends being deleted from income. Representative Hoffman? Is that a... No. Representative Donnelly. Representative Donnelly has so moved.
This is Norm Dalton.
Hello, Norm Dalton.
Yes, I didn't get a chance to make a testimony on House Bill 154 in regards to income tax.
Go ahead at this time.
Here in the rural areas, if we feel the permanent fund is a substantial security for the state, we feel that out here, if there is an income tax and we can get some capital projects out here in order to get us on some kind of a forward move, we would be glad to pay income tax rather than to be able to receive welfare or other commodities from the government. Thank you.
Thank you. Is that Mr. Wilson?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Thank you very much. I might just add, Mr. Wilson, that there are a number of us who feel that capital projects are very important to not just rural but urban Alaska as well, and that realistically, if there's going to be a predictable source of revenue available, whether it be for capital or for operating, we are going to have to adopt some new revenue-raising measures, and that's why I, for one, at least, have spoken out in support of the income tax. This proposal that we have just discussed with Representative Donnelly's motion to delete longevity bonuses and the dividends from your calculation of income should make the tax a little easier on residents. Okay, then any additional committee discussion of Representative Donnelly's amendment, the proposed?
No, no. Oh, okay. I thought that was your amendment.
Well, Representative Donnelly has offered it. Okay, is there any objection to that? Without objection, then, we will have a new CS for House Bill 154 incorporating those two.
Madam Chair?
Representative Martin?
I have another amendment I'd like to ask the committee to approve for this taxation bill.
This calls for the approval of the people before income taxing, and therefore that they should have a say as every other state allows its people, or most every other state. The problem, the reason why I think this is so extremely important today, Madam Chairman, if I may formally move the amendment and then talk about it.
You have the floor. I'll assume that you've moved it and you may have the floor.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, one of the problems we have in Alaska is that this is the only state in the nation where a simple majority of the legislators, House and Senate, can impose a taxation upon the majority of the people they do not represent. In every other state in this country, you have either two-thirds of each House. In one state, you have four-fifths of each House. And in over 50% of the states, they allow the voters' approval, either through sales tax or income tax. But I'm afraid that in this particular state, if we're going to get the feeling that we are going to have an income tax, and may suddenly see this turn over when the citizens easily prove that the majority of the people are not represented by the citizens, or not represented by the majority of the citizens. And our malfortune this year is so bad that it just, for instance, the Maine and Nome represent 11,000 constituents. The gentleman in Matsu represents 33,600 constituents. I represent 27,000 constituents. The man in Haines represents 12. And so I really feel that it would be almost criminal if we in this particular state allow the majority of the representatives this year impose the tax upon the majority of the people they do not represent.
Representative Martin, I feel the need to object to your proposed amendment. I guess I'd feel better about it had we asked the people of Alaska when we repealed the income tax whether or not they wanted it repealed. I mean, we didn't ask them when we took it off the books, so I feel less compelled to ask them when we put it back on the books. I think a lot of people believed in 1981 when we did this that it was a temporary measure based only on the fact that for a short period of time Alaskans would have a tremendous amount of oil wealth, and at least until that started its decline that we could get rid of the income tax. Those conditions have turned around, and I think by the time you get to a vote of people on this question, you will be up against the wall in terms of revenues, and you'll be facing a far worse alternative, which will be utilization of inflation proofing or the elimination of the dividends. And I, for one, don't feel as though we ought to wait until we're up against that wall. I think we ought to go ahead and do what I believe is the responsible thing this session.
Well, Madam Chairman, what you feel responsible and what I feel and what the people feel are two different things. Just leave it up to the people in less than 18 months. Now, the state ain't going to go broke that quick unless the House, which I don't have much control of, and the Senate, which I have even less control of, continue the great expenditures.
Representative Davidson?
But I don't think that we should. We did leave it up to the people. Thousands, and I still have those, telegrams and POMs came from the people when they said they wanted to repeal the taxation. And then when we had to go back into special session, in that interim of about 4 months, the people let us clearly know all over the state and let Governor Hammond know that they wanted direct repeal taxation. We had a 3 month period before we went into special session for that one and only one question.
Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, that it was not too many days ago that was Representative Martin reminded us that it is the House of Representatives and the Senate that appropriate state monies. And I believe, in fact, he even quoted from the Constitution when he indicated that. So I would certainly support the position of not having this amendment, because I think it is counter to what I believe I heard you say not too long ago. So I am not in favor of this amendment. I think that the people elect us to make the decisions to find the revenue to run state government. And I think that it is a responsible step to ensure that everybody pays a fair share of the services of this state. And I would, in fact, think that this amendment is not necessary.
Representative Boucher.
Madam Chair, Representative Martin, I intend to vote against the amendment simply because I want to see this issue on the floor and vote it up or down. I, myself, intend to vote on this bill if it goes out with a do not pass, and I would vote no to income tax on the floor. excuse me. So for that reason, I think we ought to get on with it. We ought to get it up or down. I think that this is the kitchen, and we should be the one that is taking the responsibility to make this decision. And so it's not, my vote against amendment is in no way any indication that I support the income tax. I've indicated that before.
Mr. Donnelly?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to vote in favor of the proposed amendment. So simple reason is when I was asked during the campaign whether I'd support this, I said I would. So I'm just keeping campaign promise.
Anybody else? Representative Martin.
I made the question. Madam Chairman, it's very clear in the Constitution, which I disagree with, but we have to uphold the Constitution, that we cannot allow the people to accept through referendum, which is impossible to do. If you ever look at it, there's no way in heck they can change a legislator's law within the time they stretch. But people do not have the right of appropriation. Legal service has made it very clear to me and to others that revenue generation is a completely different thing than appropriation monies. And so in Representative Davidson's concern, we're not asking them to vote on appropriation. We're asking them to have the right of new sources of revenues. If they want to have income tax, or if they want some sales tax, or any other kind, if they want to approve other revenue sources, that is the basic rights of the people to do.
Representative
Nard. Yes, Madam Chair. I'm going to go ahead and support the amendment. And there are arguments to both sides of the question, but primarily my position does fall in the same position where Representative Donnelly is on the campaign comment.
Anyone else who wishes to discuss this, or are you ready for a vote? I just indicate that I think that there is some constitutional question here, Representative Martin. There's no point in our debating it, because I think we'll get different answers from the different lawyers that we ask on it. It may not be an appropriation question, but I think the record from the meetings that were a part of the history of how our Constitution was originally adopted in Alaska make it very clear that the framers of Alaska's Constitution believed that it was a legislative responsibility, not a responsibility of the people, when it came to financial matters. And I believe that, you know, you may have a legitimate concern that because this is revenue raising as opposed to expenditure, that there's a difference. I think if you'll go back and look at that record, what you will see is that they said it is the legislature's responsibility. I think there's a good public policy rationale as to why that is the case. It is very difficult for the public without the facts and figures associated with the various alternatives to really understand what those options are. It is the most complicated area, and so for that reason, I continue to oppose your amendment.
Madam Chairman, on that point, Mr. Robertson, the delegate here from Juneau, made it very clear in the constitutional amendments and the constitutional debate on taxation and appropriation what the differences were. And Mr. Robertson almost did not even sign, but almost 90 days after the constitutional convention that Governor Egan finally got him to sign it. And this was one of the major points of taxation and revenue gathering, not appropriation. So I have read my history, and I can show you what the debates were. They wanted the people to have the right to vote on some things.
Okay, the motion is to adopt the proposed amendment. All those in favor, please raise their hand. 1, 2, 3, that's Martin, Menard, and Donnelly. And all those opposed, please. Boucher, Hoffman, Davidson, and Ulmer. Okay, is there any additional discussion? Representative Hoffman.
Yes, as I stated before the committee earlier, I have a little bit of concern, both on the low end of the spectrum and on the high end of the spectrum. I think that any tax that we pass should be fair and equitable, and I think the amendment made by Representative Donnelly is a good one, but on the other end of the spectrum, if you look at figures 7 and 8 that were passed out to us by OMB, you'll note that individuals making over $90,000, that they're 5% of the population, but they earn over 20% of the income in the state. And I feel that there should be another tax bracket in the structure. And I guess I have problems with just two tax brackets. You know, the whole concept on the federal system is that we have escalated tax structure, and for 5% of the 5% of the people making 20% of income over $90,000, I think is substantial, and it seems as though that that we should adjust our tax structure accordingly. Mm-hmm.
I might just ask, Greg Erickson is here from OMB. It is my understanding, and I can't find a piece of paper in my packet at this minute, that it is in fact a progressive tax with a higher rate, of course, for the higher income. But I guess if you have any information about the actual impact, the actual effect of the rate that is paid by the higher income people, we'd appreciate your sharing it. Looks like Representative Donnelly may have a comment on that.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I share Representative Hoffman's concern with the two-rate system. We did a lot of research the last couple of weeks into our four-rate system. Unfortunately, the numbers I developed were based on a little different tax plan than the governor's, so not applicable for us just to plug in here. But if there's a representative of revenue here today, I know they had some proposals, and we might be able to testify on a four-rate plan versus a two-rate plan that would generate the same amount of income as this proposal.
I don't see anyone from the Department of Revenue. And I'm sorry.
Actually, John Hansen is testifying at 6:00.
So you
actually take the comments.
We were just wondering if you have the data available for four-rate plan that would generate the same amount of income as the governor's proposed plan.
We have some draft material that dealt with a four-rate plan. Of course, those were cast aside once the governor made a decision for the two. But those probably went back to the table.
Yes, Mr. Erickson.
Madam Chairman, my name is Greg Erickson with OMB. I have on my desk just received this morning the output in response to your request. Has that been transmitted to you yet?
Yeah, it has. We decided, after seeing the final breakout of that, to go with the provision that's already been adopted by the committee to merely exempt the income from the permanent fund dividend and the longevity bonus. We've got the numbers for the four-rate plan under my plan, my counter-proposal, which we haven't put before the committee, but those percentages aren't necessarily applicable under the governor's plan. And what we're asking for is if you've got some numbers for a four steps of taxation under the governor's plan that would generate the same amount of income as the governor's plan.
No, we do not. And we could generate those.
I think the one problem with additional rates and breaking it down even more is you then run into the problems with simplicity versus complexity. I think one of the rationales behind the governor's version of this bill was to try and keep it as simple as possible, both so that administratively the costs would be kept down, and also from the standpoint of individuals who are doing the calculating. And I took a look at the numbers of if you had several more, and then the top tax brackets are astronomical to try and raise the same amount of revenue. Representative Hoffman.
I guess I would beg to differ, because when we're looking at the figures, I stated before that only 5% of the people at the higher end constitute 20% of the income, and it's not the income that would generate the amount of paperwork, it's the number of applicants, and the number of applicants that are making over $90,000 is just 5% of the people.
Representative Hoffman, I don't know if you've seen this one, but this is the one that shows its progressivity, so you can see as the income goes up, the larger percentage. Now, I suppose you could make the argument that it should be a steeper curve.
Well, I was looking at these two. See, here's about 2%, less than 2% of the people make over $90,000, between 90 and 100, and then about 3% make over that. So add that up, that's about 5% of the people. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the incomes, and then you have over 90,000, you have 16% and 4%, so that's 20%. 20% of income is from people that make over $90,000, and that is only 5% of the population.
Okay.
Well,
I
guess
Representative Donnelly.
I guess the choice here is whether we delay the bill for another hearing and wait to get some numbers from revenue, or whether we vote it up or down, whether they have two or four. And, you know, I'm inclined to support four, but at the same time, I don't know if there's enough support here in the committee to support four. If there isn't enough support, we should probably proceed and move the bill.
Yeah, I would prefer moving this bill out. Yeah, Representative Hoffman.
I guess if that's the committee's sentiment, my position is that I would like a four structure, and if the committee desires to move it two structure, I would be opposed to it. I would vote against that measure.
Representative Donnelly, you don't by any chance have that memo with you, do you, that shows the extreme curve goes higher?
I've got my data for the counterproposal I was going to make on the four-tiered plan, but it's just not applicable to the governor's plan because we adopted a whole separate philosophy in what we were taxing. We were taxing only in-state income, and so it's just not applicable.
Representative Martin.
Chairman, I'd like to make the motion that we pay as community substitute of House Bill 154 out of committee and vote no.
Why are you so enthusiastic about this bill, Representative Martin?
I don't understand the motion. Representative
Martin, I asked that the committee accept a motion to pass committee substitute House Bill 154 out of committee and vote no unanimously.
Oh, you mean with a no suggestion?
Yes.
Representative Martin, would you mind explaining just very briefly what alternative you feel that the state of Alaska has to any revenue raising measures? Because I get a lot of people who say, you know, they don't like the income tax or they don't like ELF, and yet they still have their long list of programs that they want the state to continue to support, like capital projects, for example.
Well, number one, I don't think it's the public purpose of a democratic society to get cold cash by hundreds of millions of dollars out to every citizen. That is not the purpose of government. I don't believe in taxing parents, hard-working individuals, just so that their kids can get a dividend. Basically, you say that we're only at 4% average of income tax now. That's minor. It's only the beginning. We all know that taxes all go up. There's nothing to stop this from going as fast this year to 5, 10, 12, 16% that we used to have in income tax. There's no stopping of this income tax going up to what it used to be, and the worst was 18%. Now, if you're giving hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars away for people who in no way, shape, or form earn it, and they only demand more and more from government, we cannot feed their greed. If they're greedy and they want more money, let them get out and earn it.
I'm so glad I asked. I'd just like to urge you to look at two things. Number one is thought to what happens if that dividend program goes away for purposes of maintaining the permanent fund and its corpus.
Yes. Madam Chairman, I have evaluated those pieces of paper and all the kinds of charts. It is not my purpose in government that the permanent fund is the most sacred cow in this world. It is not the purpose of government to save more and more and more hundreds of millions of dollars, get some of it out, and tax the working people and decrease productivity in this state or any other state. We have a welfare system that is unbelievable. Karl Marx, can you see him in his grave turning over and laughing? He can't believe the socialism of this society. Here you are giving thousands of dollars out to children, and yet you're going to tax the person that goes out there and works. The single mother, you're going to tax her because she goes out and works just to give it to someone else. You're going to give $3,000 a piece to 4,600 people who already have a retirement income of $25,000 more. You're going to give dividend checks to 3,355 prisoners and then charge working citizens so that they have to pay for those dividend checks. You have 184,000 kids who are getting those dividend checks. For what? What are you teaching them in society?
Representative Martin moved that House Bill, actually committee substitute for House Bill 154, move out of committee, and he has recommended that you vote no.
Unanimous consent, no.
But that is the motion before us. How many people support moving House Bill 154?
Oh, point of procedure,
point,
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Donnelly.
If the motion asks for unanimous consent, I think you should ask if there are any objections.
And just for my purposes, because we've never had a negative motion before, if people agree with the unanimous consent that House Bill 154 move out with a no vote, it requires you to write no.
Correct.
So anyone who does not want to write no for 154 would object to the unanimous motion to vote no. So are there any objections?
I haven't taken.
There is. The objections are noted. So House Bill 154, the question is, could I have a motion that it move out with individual recommendations? Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 154 out of committee with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection?
Yeah, the objection only because my motion superseded him. We didn't really vote on it. But if you want me to reduce the confusion, I'll withdraw my original motion that we all vote no. You have to take that one off the table.
I would like to, and what I'd really like is just a motion to move it out with individual recommendations.
So I'll take my withdrawal, my motion.
Thank you very much, Representative Martin. Then Representative Davidson's motion is in order. Is there any objection to House Bill 154, as amended by the committee, moving out with individual recommendations? Okay, objections are noted.
Okay, now just I'm no voter on this thing without a lot of speech and what have you. I can just write do not pass.
You can write do not pass, no rec, do pass,
do
or to
pass.
Amend. You may.
All
of those choices are in front of you, Representative
Salva.
Okay, where we're at here, Madam Chair, as I see it, is we've got a motion to move the bill with individual recommendations. We ask unanimous consent. There was an objection, but now we should proceed to vote on that motion. At that time, I want to raise a point of parliamentary procedure.
Okay, the motion is how many people will support moving it out of committee with individual recommendations?
Two.
With individual recommendations.
Oh, okay, all right. Yes.
Four.
Which was status.
Just a second. I want it on the floor. I want to see the people stand up on this.
Okay, room. And your point of
my point is I disagree with Representative Martin's description of the parliamentary procedure
the
at that particular time. I do not believe that it was necessary for him to withdraw his motion. His motion was to move the bill out of committee with a no recommendation. That all that required was one objection, and at that point that motion was null and void, and we could proceed with the next motion.
With the way it was.
Thank you for that clarification.
I just cleaned it up.
And from now on, will you please all recommend no recs, if that's what you choose, and individual recommendations. Okay, then 154 is out of committee, as in Senate Bill 157.
Wait, we didn't have to vote then.
Yes, we did. There were four votes to move it out of committee.
Yep. What do you want to do? Leave it here?
Well, you didn't really make the motion. You just said, well, how many? You're trying to feel
Representative
around.
Representative Davidson.
He made the motion. But you really didn't ask the question.
There were four hands that went up. One, two, three, four hands went up.
Yeah.
Okay. HJR 12 is the only other item. House Bill 160.
Now we see what happened.
Representative Boucher's bill, House Bill 160. You do have a committee substitute in front of you. And I would first ask the sponsor whether the committee substitute is what you had intended it to be. Do you have any objections to the committee substitute, or do you want to move the CS?
I'd like to move it.
Okay, the CS has been moved for House Bill 160. Representative Hoffman?
I guess clarification. Is the record going to show?
Oh, God, I almost signed in the wrong
which,
line.
Representative Hoffman.
Is the record going to show assigned people voted to move this piece of legislation out of committee or not?
Boucher, Davidson, Donnelly, and Alden, which I believe the secretary usually does on those motions. Okay, Representative Boucher has moved CSHB 160. It is before us for discussion. Representative Martin?
Yes, Madam Chairman, we can't pay the bill out. I did mention it last week. I thought we got a fiscal note. You don't have a fiscal note. If you don't give me this stuff, we're going to send it forward.
Just fiscal note.
You can't.
Or you can't.
A commission like
about this?
Have we requested fiscal numbers?
Didn't we get a fiscal number?
Did we request it last week and didn't get it? It's a point well taken. We have been pretty adamant about having fiscal numbers before we passed the bill out. Representative Hoffman?
Yes, Madam Chairman, I guess I would like to request the staff to prepare a four-tiered structure, even though we're passing this one out of committee, for the next committee of referral to consider a four-tiered structure.
Okay. We do have, we can make available the materials that Representative Donnelly had worked on if you don't have any objections to that.
But if
we could definitely request Department of Revenue to change the assumptions and change, come up with a new number, if you can afterwards explain to me exactly what you want to be. Okay. All right. Representative Boucher?
Yes, ma'am.
We'll bring it back up Wednesday, and hopefully by that time we'll have a fiscal number. Okay?
Madam Chairman, why
and you might just put a little pressure on the people to do the fiscal notes.
Yes, ma'am.
And increase the chances that we'll have it. Okay.
Actually, that was one of those things that was supposed to happen.
Yeah.
While we're on the bill and clean it up, I thought we did make the understanding on line 13 that we would say approved by the people instead of created.
We did. Are you looking at the CS?
I thought this was the CS.
Work draft dated 4-6.
4-6, okay.
It does say approved. I would just urge all members to take a look at this proposed CS between now and Wednesday, and if you do have any other changes that you'd like to make, please let me know. Okay, moving on then to HJR 12.
Could I have a copy of the committee substitute?
Okay, that's it. Committee members, we'll take a 2-minute at ease while we're waiting for the sponsor of HJR 12. Come back to order, please. Next item on our agenda is House Joint Resolution 12. The prime sponsor, Representative Steve Rieger, is with us to explain to us the new version that we have in front of us. Hi, Steve.
Madam Chairman, are we on teleconference?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, this bill has been before you before. This bill has been before you before, so I won't go through the explanation of what the bill does again, but one specific request, which was made before the bill was brought back to the committee for any action, was to have, rather than a retrospective calculation of how the spending limit would work and how the budget reserve fund would work, to get a prospective calculation. And I had specifically avoided doing that the first time because I wanted some numbers which were ironclad rather than using numbers which were somewhat, just based on a forecast and subject to question. What I did do in the numbers you have before you and in your packet the back was took the March revenue forecasts, which just came out 2 weeks ago, and used the Department of Revenue mean forecast, the average forecast projected into the future, and then calculated that and showed how the budget reserve fund would work. Then I gave two examples. I had one example where, hypothetically, the state got a $1 billion windfall in 1 year and showed how the budget reserve fund would work in that situation. Then I, in the third case, I took a hypothetical case similar to what we had in fiscal year 87 where the bottom dropped out from underneath us and removed $1 billion from the state revenue stream. And probably the best way to look at that is to look at the three graphs, which House Research was kind enough to have plotted. The first graph shows three lines. It's a little difficult to read because the lines touch each other in certain places. But if you have the graphs in front of you, the first one shows...
Excuse me, you're now on table one, limits and limited budget.
Table one.
It's the fourth page or so of this table sheet that looks like so.
Right, it's the graphs which follow the table. There are, the way to read this chart is to look at... Look at the code at the bottom where there's little plus marks which show upper limit and little vertical lines which show lower limit. What those squares which follow along the lower edge of this path as goes across the page show is what each year when you calculate the spending limit for the following year, that's as low as you would be going within the limit. The pluses, which outline the top bracket, show what the upper limit is of what you would have to spend in each year. The diamond-shaped ones, which stay between those, show what actually happens. That is the action of the constitutional spending limit, which tends to keep you within the upper and lower limit. Now, this doesn't show very much about the action of the Budget Reserve Fund, because this is the DOR average revenue forecast, which doesn't tend to vary that much. And really, the reason that it even shows an increase on this chart is because of inflation, assumed inflation rates. And if it were inflation-adjusted, actually that trend line would be somewhat downward. The next page shows what would happen if there were a $1 billion windfall in the year fiscal 1991. In that case, what you see in the line which is tracked by the squares is the actual appropriations. In the line which is outlined by the little plus marks is the actual revenues. And it shows that in the year that we have the tremendous amount of extra revenue, the spending does not go up to meet that revenue. The spending is limited. The difference between those two is the money which goes into the Budget Reserve Fund. That spending limit tends to smooth things out till once again the two track concurrently. The last graph shows what would happen in the year 1995 if we had a year where the bottom dropped down. In that case, instead of having spending plummet to match what happens to revenues, the decline in spending is limited because there's a draw on the Budget Reserve Fund, and actual spending goes down by a lesser amount. And if you look at that last graph, you can see that actual revenues tend to bounce around quite a bit. But if you look at what actual spending does, the spending follows a much smoother line. It's not an exactly smooth line, but it's tempered. And that's the whole purpose of the combination of spending limit and Budget Reserve Fund. Now, these are backed up by actual numbers. And the first three tables show the actual numbers. So if you're curious about what those numbers are, what those graphs actually represent, you can look at the numbers on the tables. And if you have a specific question on one, I can try to correlate what's on these tables to what's on the graphs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. They're going a little out of date in the sense that we're not beginning at 1.8 anymore. I mean, obviously the House has already confirmed its signature at 2.1 or 2.2, so way above the minimum that you have here.
That's Representative Martin, to respond to that. You are correct to some extent. We had to hypothetically establish a beginning year for a spending plan. And I might point out, though, that spending is only those types of spending which are subject to the limit. It's not overall general fund spending. What you have primarily in the limited budget is capital and operating. You don't have the debt service. You don't have appropriations to the permanent fund. So when you make reference to 2.0 or 2.1, that's not quite the same as what we're spending just on capital and operating. And what I used in this as a hypothetical starting point was 1.777 based on the governor's request. It is a hypothetical number, but it's as good as any.
But, Mr. Chairman, if I may, it is your intention, though, that we should include, in order to get a real grab on this thing, loans, debt services. Another thing that we leave out is insurance.
Chairman, in response, that on the tables, the column labeled column 5 is the total of the types of spending which are subject to the spending limit. Column 6 is the total of all general fund appropriations.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between those essentially is the debt service, GO debt service, because I didn't make any special assumptions about special appropriations to the permanent fund or some other special appropriations outside the limit, which really are only debt service, Budget Reserve Fund appropriations, or the appropriations to the permanent fund.
Further questions? Desires of the committee? Representative Menard.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. If there's no further discussion, I'd like to make a motion that we move out with individual recommendations.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, the bill is...
I'm including and asking that we adopt the CS version.
Any objections? Any other business before the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make it official on the record that we're going to ask staff to contact the Department of Revenue and prepare what percentages would be appropriate in a four-tier scheme for the income tax legislation we passed earlier, and just have that inserted into a letter to the committee that we can forward to the finance. Yes.
Hearing none, no other items for discussion, this meeting is adjourned.
Hey, I like you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Fast gavel.
Don't pull them.
They
should
be color coded.
Oh.